Friday. The Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590 The Fan, Blake Murphy, JD Bunkus, Ailish Forfar. Give them a follow, add their names on their socials. Subscribe to The Fan Morning Show, wherever you get your podcasts. Also, if you're listening on the podcast, we've been playing old Jay's walk-up songs as a little trivia game to get us ready for opening day tomorrow. You can head over to The Fan Morning Show Oxcord Friday playlist on Spotify if you want to listen along, because we are going to talk about those a little bit. We're going to see if our next guest is awake enough to remember who came out to that last song. It's Ben Ennis, co-host of The Fan Drive Time. Good morning, Ben. Is it too early for memory games?
I'm so mad. I'm infuriated because, of course, like I've heard that 1,000 times. Like I can place it in the Blue Jays era of 2013 to 2017.
Ben,
I can't. Okay, JD, you do it.
He was a guest. We used to have him on Good Show all the time. When we did a home opener show, he did a full sit down with us. He showed up. We had he sat in on a home opener show with us. Actually, it wasn't a home opener show. It was Vlad's first game. He did a panel hit with us.
What, JP Aaron Sebia?
Yes.
No.
That's not JP.
I knew it wasn't. No.
So there are multiple correct answers for this one. JP and Sebia did come out to it, so sorry to Vic that I didn't have the other.
Oh!
Wow.
I was just going to say, I know this for a fact, Vic. Vic, fired by 7 o'clock.
He's drunk!
That one's my bad because I only put one answer on the sheet that I sent Vic.
Wow.
But there are multiple correct answers for this one.
Oh,
okay.
JP and Sebia is one of them, and I picked him because I know he used to come on Good Show. But there's another one if you can. I'll give you a hint on this one. It's you mentioned him during the break when you were listing off other walk-up songs.
Wait. No, earlier I mentioned than that, Scott Rolen, who used
to... Yeah, Scott Rolen came out to it as well.
Yeah, but I could have sworn Scott Rolen also came out to Coldplay, and it was hilarious.
Yeah, he changed his all the time.
This game is rigged.
Okay, it was Scott Rolen.
Yeah. What do you mean it's rigged? Basically, I played this game for this segment where no matter what the answer is, you're right because multiple like Audio Slave is like the most. If you chopped up like 2005 to 2015, got to be like top five most used walk up band in all of Major League Baseball. Like Google Audio Slave walk up music is just a long, long list. Every player.
I mean, it really does thump. It really does thump as a walkout song. Like, you want something that makes people move. You don't think that thumps? Like,
no, it thumps. I will say that like Rage Against the Machine is my favorite band of all time. That I never got into Audio Slave. It just never took for me, and I don't have a good explanation why. It just wasn't for me. And I like Soundgarden too, but Audio Slave not for me.
Yeah, that's fine. It's not for everyone. I do think that's a good walk-up. Obviously. It's you got to look at two different types of walk up, right? If you're a hitter, you only get like 8 to 12 seconds, so you need one that hits right away, like that one. If you're a relief pitcher, though, you get to string it out a little longer. Maybe there's a couple relievers in the mix later in the show. We'll see. It is Ben Ennis, co-host of The Fan Drive Time. We're talking Toronto Blue Jays. The season begins tomorrow. While Ben reconnects here, a reminder in the 6 a.m. hour, and we're going to sprinkle these in throughout the show. We did some Blue Jays season props, some of them real, some of them fake. We're going to kick one of the real ones at Ben first. Ben, I sent you a list of some of the season-long props for the Blue Jays, whether they were win totals, awards, stats, whatever, and I asked you to pick your favorite. So go ahead. Which one off that list do you find the best value, do you like the most?
Oh, that's all I have to do? I thought I had to pick one from each category. But, yeah, this is way easier.
You can.
I like this a lot. No. This is way easier.
That was the original idea.
Let's do this one.
No. Fine. And then we were going, like, 8 or 9 minutes on each one. I'm like, well, I can't go through all of these. It's going to be a 10-hour show.
No, I love it. I love Bo plus 1,100 for most hits. I mean, he had the most hits in the American League last year. Like, what are we doing here? Yeah, obviously, Bo for most hits. That's great value. I love that one. I hadn't seen that. Love it, love it, love it. He doesn't have my favorite offensive profile because he's not an on-base machine, but that's okay. He's an incredible bat-to-ball guy. and he's already done it. Like I said, he's going to be hitting in the heart of one of the best lineups in all of baseball. Yeah, give me Bo for most hits. Is that in the American League or in all of baseball?
That's all of baseball.
That particular one was for all of baseball. But yeah, here's the thing about not drawing walks. It's more opportunity to get hits. Vlad was up there in the hits leaders too, but Vlad's going to take some walks.
Well, that's the thing. You go back and you look at Ted Williams, like during his 400 season, he had like 120 hits because he just walked like every third at bat, right? Yeah. That's the way she goes.
Can't hit the ball without swinging the bat, meat.
So I love this because it makes Ennis in a pretzel. He goes, I'm trying to win a bet with Bo, but it forces Bo to kind of like go all in on the thing Ennis hates the most about him, which is that he never draws a walk.
The thing I hate the most.
Yeah.
Getting hits. Yeah, I hate
it. No, you don't. You love, but you are a guy who is the walking. In fact, New Randall was born out of our belief that he could learn to draw a walk, and that was the entire impetus of like, ever since you and I have been friends, there's always someone on the team where we go, if this guy could just draw a few more walks, and that's because Ennis cares the most about who has walks or not. And so you said it. He doesn't have your favorite offensive profile. That brings me to this. It's another question we had from earlier. So Bo is plus 2,200 to win MVP, right? And I said, okay, yeah, there's actually a case with his improved defense and this team being great and him being a hits leader. And there's a lot of people around baseball that believe Bo can win that award someday. But do you think that his inability to draw walks actually prevents him from ever winning this award? Because, like, yeah, this is now an OPS is our number one statistic that we go to. And I feel like he has to hit so many home runs to be able to outweigh that lack of on base.
No, he just has to hit a lot. Like Ichiro
but he
Suzuki,
already did hit a lot. He led the American League.
Yeah, and he only had like three more hits than Vlad. Like because Vlad was just an all-around better hitter. But yeah, I love Ichiro. I know you like to pretend like I didn't love Ichiro.
You're not allowed to talk about Ichiro.
No, like, Ichiro is unbelievable. And Ichiro never walked. But you know what he did? Yeah. Got a hit like every time he stepped to the plate. He was unfreaking believable. So there's a way to overcome not taking walks. I just think walks are the thing you can count on the most to maintain your high-level offensive profile year after year after year. It's hard to hit. It's hard to come up with 200 hits a season. It's hard to go 2 for 4 every single day. It's easier to go 1 for 3 with a walk. It just is. No, the thing that's holding him back from winning MVP is that he plays on a team with Vlad Jr. Like, you're not going to win the MVP if you're not even the best hitter on your team. I was going through the Fangraphs WAR leaderboard from a season ago. He was great. He led the American League in hits. Like I said, he played almost 162 games. He played 159 games last year, which is crazy, too. And most of it at shortstop, a couple of DH days, and played pretty decent defense at DH. But in the American League, he was still 12th in WAR. It was a tremendous season for him, and still he wasn't near the conversation. He wasn't in the Marcus Semien realm. He wasn't in the Vlad Jr. realm. I think he can replicate that, maybe be slightly better, but the idea that he's going to take like that quantum leap into MVP territory, yeah, that's a little bit much for me. He's an incredible, incredible player and one of the top five shortstops in all of baseball, but hard for me to imagine him winning an MVP.
Okay, so this is where then I want to go, since we're talking about quantum leaps. And I want you guys to answer this too afterwards. Like, Blake, what do you think about this as well? But Ben, if we're looking at ways where the Blue Jays roster is going to improve, this has been one of my difficulties when I've been looking at them, is that Vlad just had a season where I'm going, okay, well, how much better could it be? Bo just had a season where I go, how much better could it be? Of course, Springer is going to play, but they lost Semien. They replaced him with a guy with better defense, but less of an offensive profile, and Matt Chapman. Like, where do you see on this roster, whether it's the pitching or the offense, like the ability to have the quantum leap, or do you even really need one?
There's a quantum leap if they're not the worst bullpenning team in baseball the first half of the season. Like, are you kidding me? They're just like double-digit games. And also, remember, Tanner Roark used to be on this team. You know, like, it's there are pretty clear improvements that have been made in the pitching department.
I buried
the most significant is in the bullpen. I mean, on paper. Again, on paper at the beginning of last season, it looked like Tyler Chatwood was going to be a revelation. You never can quite tell with bullpens. It's the area where there's most vacillation one year to the next, the unpredictability. But they were so, so awful protecting leads and handing them away because, you know, Trent Thornton was asked to get big outs in the 7th, 8th, and, well, not really 9th, but 6th, 7th, 8th innings last year. That sewered them. It absolutely crushed them. I mean, I know you can't quite do the math thing where, hey, well, Matt Chapman's great, but is he as good as the guy that finished third in the American League MVP voting and Marcus Semien? No. And, hey, Kevin Gausman had a great season and probably going to be slightly worse. And will he be as good as Robbie Ray was in winning the American League Cy Young Award last year? No. But, you know, it's a different space-time continuum, man. It's just not a straight math equation. Yeah, I guess if you plop them down into the, like, you replay all the games from last year with those guys, I guess they're worse, but we're starting a new year here. This is an entirely different season.
So I'm with you on that, and I think, you know, on the hitting side, yeah, you
on space-time continuum, you're with them on the space-time continuum. Is that where we're gonna go now?
I'm gonna rip through the space-time continuum. I'm gonna do a quantum leap here.
Yeah,
Scott Bakula. I'm gonna get us to Major League Three. Buzz back to the minors because the quantum leap guy is the lead in that movie. I don't know. We'll find our way through it. But yeah, you take some of Semien, Vlad, and Bo probably aren't gonna get all 690 plate appearances or more. Semien's gonna get zero for the Jays. But you get more Springer, you get Chapman in there, the defense is a little better. But yeah, the bullpen is where the biggest gains could be. They were 25th in bullpen performance by WAR last year. That's maybe not the best way to quantify the bullpen, but Trent Thornton had 5 appearances that Fangraphs quantified as a meltdown. Taylor Sosado had 5. Dolis had 6. Anthony Castro had 7. We're talking about guys who were playing regular chunks of time out of the bullpen who were just meltdown. And that meltdown stat isn't perfect, but any time that you're among the leaders, even though you were DFA'd a month into your appearance, it's not great. The Jays went through 33 relievers last year. That's always, like, you're always going to go through a lot of relievers, but I think the best thing you could say about the Jays bullpen, and this is twofold, is one, it's the easiest thing to upgrade as you go if it ends up not being as good as you think, but two, they have 11 options. They've got 11 guys in the bullpen to start the year. And yeah, sometimes there's a bit of a, oh, if everyone's your eighth inning guy, you don't actually have an eighth inning guy. But all I really care about from a bullpen, especially if you're like this front office and your approach is to build a bullpen on the cheap, all I care about is you have a lot of guys you can go to. You don't have to be waiver claiming. You don't have to be trading low-end stuff throughout the course of the season. You've got 11 guys there, Vasquez and Castro and Graham Spraker and Sean Anderson in the minors. You've got guys you can turn to. You could always convert Anthony Kay again if you don't want to have
all those options. Sounded horrible. I just want
to know. Here's the thing.
Yeah, like, if you said that with a straight face. Like, do you work for Shapiro?
If we did this exercise for all 30 teams, all 30 segments would be like, oh, yeah, after the first 2 or 3 bullpen guys, who knows? So the important thing is here, you have lots of options you can turn to. A couple of those guys are going to stink. A couple of them are going to click. You just hope there are 5 or 6 that are clicking by the time the playoffs roll around and that you don't finish. Hey, you know what? If you finish 15th instead of 25th in bullpen performance, that's huge because you were the number 2 offense in baseball last year, and you're probably going to be top 5 at worst this year.
Well, I was just going to say, let's not forget that it wasn't even really the 8th inning. It definitely wasn't the 9th inning that was killing this Blue Jays team. It was literally like the 6th and 7th inning where they were just trying to get 3 outs. Like, just don't sewer us here. And like you said, the meltdowns were happening. It was the Trent Thorntons. And by the time they took away his sticky stuff, Chapman was absolutely unplayable.
Yeah.
And the other thing that stood out to me and what you said is that it's the easiest thing to change on the fly, which it is, and the Blue Jays eventually did it, But they jumped the market. Remember, that was it was an incredible job they did getting Adam Simber and Trevor Richards, what, a month before
minus
the deadline.
Minus it cost them the MVP of the second half, Rowdy Tellez, but yes.
Yeah, I don't know if he was quite that, but he is going to be the opening day first baseman, I think, for the Milwaukee Brewers. Looking forward to watching him this afternoon. But yeah,
Shulman reminded us every day of the summer that yeah, Rowdy Tellez, who he kept his stock, he's kept his Rowdy Tellez stock that he was raking, so...
Yeah, no. I'm not afraid of Rowdy Tellez coming back to haunt the Blue
they
Jays.
They did jump the market, Ennis, yeah. And it was a good move by them. But I will just say this. Okay, this is maybe another question. Are we sure about the bullpen? Like, Romano feels like a guy who does get sneaky, weirded. Like, even I know it was a dog trip or whatever, but it's just like, I don't really trust his health yet. I don't really know a lot of these names in the bullpen. Bullpens are shaky in the, like, they don't have a stud back end here. Like, maybe they have a little bit more depth, but I'm not throwing this bullpen amongst, like, wow, they're so dominant, they're so incredible. And also, here's the hot take. Are we sure the defense is better? Because they got Matt Chapman, and that's awesome, so that's a huge upgrade there. But Marcus Semien's also not playing second base anymore. He was pretty damn good at that. And also, yeah. Randall Grichuk is a better center fielder than George Springer is. And, yep. Like, what is George Springer going to be, especially when they need to give him the night off and they ask Tapia, who's a corner outfielder, to play center field? Like, are we actually sure that on balance, and then our guy Alejandro Kirk is behind the dish instead of Reese McGuire? Like, on balance, are they actually a better defensive team?
Maybe not. Like, it's not their calling card outside of the left side of the infield, I think, because I think Matt Chapman is going to help Bo Bichette tremendously. The outfield defense could very easily be a problem. This is still a team that needs to get by on offense and good enough pitching, right? Like, I think the top three of the rotation is you can put them up against anybody in baseball, but nobody... I guess Berríos and I guess Gausman too. I mean, if you just kind of ignore the second half of last year, have like Cy Young upside, but like those, you don't need either of those guys to be a top three pitcher in all of baseball. If they're both top 10 guys, like that's a tremendous advantage when you have the best offense in baseball. And as far as the bullpen's concerned, outside of the Rays, who still have a million guys who throw 1,000 miles an hour, even look at the Yankees. Okay. Chapman, is he the same guy as he was before? Red Sox, same thing. Like, Matt Barnes was the best reliever in baseball first half, and then he was unplayable in the second half, and the Blue Jays took advantage of that, especially at Rogers Center. So Jordan Romano had, like, a little bit of a bump when they took away his sticky stuff last year, but then figured it out. Jimmy Garcia, I think he wants us to call him Jimmy. He wants us to call him Jimmy. Jimmy Garcia, I think he's going to see some time in the ninth inning as well.
What's the grateful dead
guy? I wonder if there's a step back. That's because he was
Jerry.
So good.
Yeah, so I was like, okay, Jimmy Garcia.
Jimmy Garcia. Yeah, there's a lot of potential in this bullpen, but not a lot of sure things. But that's I think you go around baseball, there's not too many teams who have sure things outside of the Rays, who just have fireballer after fireball back there.
And the Rays, it doesn't even matter, right? If they didn't have fireballers back there, you'd say, well, fireballers are out of vogue now. Whatever the Rays are doing,
that's right.
Ground balls
ball
cool
is the new fireball.
You don't have three guys who throw an EFIS? Well, your bullpen's toast. Whatever the Rays are doing are fine. Okay, so let's zoom back out a little bit. One of the things that happened yesterday during the course of the show, right at the end of the show, was Jose Ramirez signed an extension with the Cleveland Guardians. That's out now. Ben, your initial reaction to that, but more importantly, who is the new Jose Ramirez that everyone is just going to throw into trade scenarios between now and August for the Blue Jays to add? Because as JD pointed out yesterday, as much as the Ramirez thing dragged on so long, it was kind of a why hasn't this happened yet red flag. They still could use a lefty bat in the middle of that order.
Yeah, I thought the same thing. Like, who are the guys now that they're targeting? And obviously, there's nobody on the level of Jose Ramirez or a Ketel Marte. I did come up with a couple of names, though. They're on balance. I don't know if they are better than what Santiago Espinal and Kevin Biggio could be, but I mean, they're a little more proven products.
Love where this segment's going, but okay.
Yeah, I knew Tony Kemp was going to be one of them.
Tony Kemp, I also looked at teams who obviously were not going to compete, who would be very open to selling off pieces at the deadline. Tony Kemp, your leadoff hitter for your Oakland A's. You may remember him from his time in Houston, but he can play all over the diamond as well. Left-handed hitter, can take a walk, but has good bat-to-ball skills as well. I liked Tony Kemp a lot. Cesar Hernandez out of Washington as well, switch hitter, not as good on-base skills as Tony Kemp. Those were two guys. I just did like a kind of a cursory look, but honestly, you don't need to make a move like that before the season. That's like a kind of break glass in case of emergency. If Santiago Espinal and Kevin Biggio can't get it done, if they are an absolute black hole and it's really hurting you, which is really honestly hard to believe, because even in an abominable injury plague season for Kevin Biggio, he still had an above league average on base percentage, and Santiago Espinal has only hit 300 in his entire major league career. So hard for me to imagine that those guys, especially considering what's around them, is sewering this team. But I did look at a couple of guys, and there are some possibilities. Nothing close to Jose Ramirez, who's a top five MVP candidate year over year over year, or a Ketel Marte, who is, arguably the best second baseman in all of baseball.
Okay. Yeah, what you run into there, too, is, I mean, for me at least, if Cesar Hernandez is better than what you're getting from Biggio and Espinal, we probably have a bigger problem.
Yeah.
Like I know the glove is there. I know he used to be an OBP guy, but he really hasn't been his last two full seasons. I like Tony Kemp. Tony Kemp's also cheap. So you're talking like when we look at, hey, what might the budget have left? Could you add a reliever at the deadline? That kind of stuff. I don't think Kemp draws from anything other than your depth prospect stash. But yeah, it's a, I don't know. It's a tough spot. The other thing is like, are you looking at a short-term rental because they actually believe Aurelvis Martinez isn't that far away and he's getting second base reps in the minors this year?
But like, don't do this because then Ennis is going to do like 30 minutes. There's going to be a fight. It's really like Blake is. It was no, we did. We've already had an Aurelvis Martinez fight. Ennis is already like putting him in fourth in the order. Like he's ready. He thinks he's going to be here this year. It's a weird Blue Jays season because this is what happens when you have expectations all of a sudden, right? People start to pick at nits. You can both be excited about the Blue Jays and recognize that they're a very, very good team, but also have some fears. And like, I think that that's a bit of the role that I'm playing right now, where I'm so optimistic about them and I see how close they are that I want to make sure that they capitalize on the opportunity and that they don't blow it by having the little bit of misses, right? And that's why I would say that the bullpen concerns me a little touch, where I go, okay, they blew it last year, and yeah, you're right, Ben. No one has a great bullpen, and it's something that modern-day baseball doesn't prioritize. But I guess I'm just not as overly optimistic about the bullpen as maybe some other people are. But the other part of this is that these guys, every indication they have given us through what they've coveted in free agency or through a trade or whatever this offseason was like, lefty bat, lefty bat, lefty bat, lefty bat. And if you remember last year, okay, sure, the bullpen sewered them out of the gate. It was horrific, and it was truly one of the stories of the year, and it's the biggest area for improvement. But I also remember when they slumped after the All-Star break, and we had every guest that was a major league hitter coming on here and saying they need more versatility in the lineup. They just need more versatility in the batting order. More versatility, more versatility. And they didn't really address it. And after they tried to address it, failed to address it, now going into this season, it is a bit of a fear for me. And I go, when we're talking about Cesar Hernandez or trying to get on-base percentage from Kevin Biggio, like Kevin Biggio was already kind of supposed to be in the equation in this anyways. Like it wasn't, yo, you have someone else and it swaps out Biggio. Like you were just supposed to have another guy. And so it's nice that they have the prospect flexibility that they can go out and do this. It's nice that they're going to be a good enough team that they'll still remain in the mix for this. But I still believe that this is one of those stories where you're going, you have to look at what they did, and you have to look at ways that they can improve. And to me, this is actually like the no-brainer, no-question, number one way to improve and the number one thing that they kind of have to focus on throughout the year.
Is get more left-handed, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do like in an overall sense, I like the line of questioning because it is nice to be excited about this team. But yeah, it's not a perfect team. They're going to lose some games and there's going to be things that go wrong with this team.
Yeah, yeah.
And I know that's kind of the nature of talking about baseball before a game has been played, about, you know, how all the great things that are going to happen. But there's going to be things that go wrong with this team. And you're right. Like late and close last year, the Blue Jays had some times where they struggled against high-powered right-handed pitching, bullpen arms, right? Like, that was an issue. But to that, I would say, all right, who out of the top seven do you wish was somebody different that was left-handed? And who are you pinch hitting for with, like, your lefty bat off the bench? That person doesn't exist. So, yeah, I guess in a perfect – again, like, perfect world, this team has Jose Ramirez in the top five. It's not the perfect lineup. I'm sorry. It's just, like, a very good one and one of the best.
But it could have been, and I dreamed about it being perfect with Ramirez, and that's why it hurts.
I don't know how you do better than that. I'm not sure. And, like, when Alejandro Kirk is catching, like, there's – who's going to put out a nine-man lineup that would have been better than that? I mean, the Dodgers would come close, but, no, there's no way that supersedes what the Blue Jays could have done. Didn't happen. You got to be satisfied, I guess, with being, like, very good and maybe the best of a generation. I'm satisfied.
I just still view it as, like, what you said, which is, like, they're going to need that bat. And I think the organization made – like, why would they ever be in on Freddie Freeman? It made no sense other than the fact that they were like, we desperately covet this guy because he changes the way that this batting order looks.
Yeah, well, and he's Freddie Freeman, but yeah, I think maybe we spent probably too much airtime talking about Freddie Freeman in relation to how interested the Blue Jays really were in Freddie Freeman. I don't think it was ever going to happen.
Buddy, the only thing better and more exciting than baseball games is baseball transactions, of course.
That is
of course
right.
We're going to do that. So this has been a lot to kick around. It's time for the official Something to Chew On, brought to you by Great Canadian Meats.
Yum, yum, yum.
So I want to take it back to the bullpen here. I want to throw a prop at you guys before we take a break and talk some Masters stuff on the other side. So you guys mentioned the bullpen. It's always going to be a question mark for teams. Something like, you know, the fantasy guy in me is like, okay, something like 15 teams will change their closer over the course of the year from what we see right now. JD, you mentioned you have some Jordan Romano health hesitation. So final prop for you guys in this segment and something to chew on, more saves. Jordan Romano or every other Jays reliever combined?
Depends for if context, he hurts himself walking his dog. Yeah.
For context, last year Romano had 23 saves. The rest of the bullpen had 11. So this was a big win for Romano last year. But the Jays were really low on the save scale. As I mentioned, they had a lot of meltdowns and blown opportunities. So there should be more saves to be had this year unless you're beating teams by like five every game. Romano or everyone else combined? Ailish, I'll start with you.
Well, as I said, the biggest concern is if he has any more phantom dog walking injuries. If he doesn't, I'm going to go with him as the choice. He's also a friend of the show.
A
great guy. He's been on the show with us. I'm hoping for a consistent year from him. So that's my choice.
All right, JD, you have a little less optimism about Romano, I believe.
I don't think I actually have. I really like Romano and Ennis and I used to call him the fireman because he was the guy that could come in any spot and put out a fire. And I actually think that that's the role for him of the future. So I'm going to take the everybody else because I think eventually this team is going to add a closer and that's going to be the way that they address this bullpen down the stretch, that they make a trade for a name at some point this season and it bumps Romano down. I am a little hesitant, like I said, it's just there's been some weird stuff with him injury-wise and whatever. But I actually think that the role of, yes, the swing reliever who can just show up in a big spot is what he's been always destined for, and that is what eventually he's going to land back doing. So I'll take everybody else, especially considering you mentioned it, all those blown saves earlier in the year and the fact that, like, injuries, everything on altogether, I think that paints the picture. And Ennis, before you answer this question as well, liars who lie, the getting hurt because your dog pulled you over is ranks where on like is it today on Liars Who Lie?
Yeah, no, that there's more to that story. Yeah. I have no idea. It's a weird one, but yeah, there's been plenty of weird ones. I mean, Brett Cecil messed his hand up making a chicken sandwich. So, what are you gonna do? No, from a statistical standpoint, listen, I like Jordan Romano, and I think he was good for this team, and I think he's a fine option to have in the ninth inning. But they've already said Jimmy Garcia is going to get ninth inning opportunities. Like, you know, this is already happening. You know, the fact that what did you say, Blake? Last year it was like 23-11, Jordan Romano. Like, that's – and the rest of the bullpen was awful. So it's going to be slightly better than awful this year. I think, yeah, if I was a betting person, which I am, that I would wager on the rest of this bullpen getting more saves than Romano. But that has nothing to do with not trusting Jordan Romano. It might be a health thing. It might be a Jimmy Garcia taking some saves away from him, and the rest of this bullpen not being as atrocious as it was a season ago. Plus, you can get saves in a myriad of different weirdo ways. Like, we like to think of the save with the, you know, it's 5-4 in the ninth inning against the New York Yankees. Now, you're like up a run in the eighth, and then you score 5, but that reliever just stays in and finishes the game. That's a save. So, yeah, no, the rest of the bullpen over Jordan Romano.
You're also going to get the odd, like, Trent Thornton, hey, go out there and give us 3 innings when we're up 12.
Yeah.
Save.
Save.
You get that as well. So I'm with you. I'm going to take the field total over Romano because, again, Jimmy Garcia opportunities, randomness, the potential to add a closer.
Well, when Jordan Romano comes on the show, I'll be pumping his tires.
He's only going to come on if JD and I are off.
Yeah, no problem. I'll interview him.
When it's the morning show with Ailish Forfar. So that's something
that we're going to call Jimmy Garcia then, like Jimbo. Like, where's the nickname going to land if he's good? Because I feel like Jimbo is the leading candidate.
I'm not sure on that. We'll ruminate on that over the break. JD, you got a little digitized there, so we'll reconnect you over the break as well. Ben Ennis is going to stick with us. We can kick around some more Jays stuff, but the big thing today, at least, Tiger Woods. Back in action. His tee time's been pushed back half an hour to 11:04, but it's the Masters. It's Masters weekend. We'll continue talking to Ben Ennis about that after this. It's the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Unrivaled insight, analysis, and opinions on all things Blue Jays. Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590, The Fan. It's the Ben Ennis Power Hour. Back to back with Ben, our guy. Fan Drive Time, you can listen to him there. We have the most beautiful time of the year. Starts today. The Masters, it's Tiger time. We have a great text line question that I will pose to you guys. Which...
Hang on, sorry, can I jump in before that? Did you guys get the song? Did you get the walk-up song?
I thought I thought it was Marco Scudero, but he's Gasolina. No, who is? It's not Jose Bautista. Who? No.
JD,
I thought
you
I
got
did.
It? I don't know if JD's answering.
No, he's he's muted.
Yeah, no. I was
is that
muted,
a no?
But no,
classic
no,
muted.
Here's the thing about me with this stuff is like when I hear Spanish music like that. It's like it's very hard for me to differentiate the songs. Like I have ear blindness.
I understand that. I thought that this particular player used it long enough and was here long enough that maybe it would hit. It's Alex Rios. That's Los Bandoleros by Don Omar. Okay. Don Omar, by the way, who walked so Bad Bunny could run and fly off the top rope at WrestleMania and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Alex Rios. I knew that one would be a tough one, but I'm trying to mix up the difficulties.
Yeah.
So that one's from a million years ago. My brain was never going to latch onto that one.
I actually am glad that we did that. Like, I actually had a real dalliance with loving Alex Rios, and then I think Alex Rios is the biggest swing of guy that I was. Oh my God, this is the future of the baseball team. Like, I'm going to confess something. I used to have Alex Rios' name as a password to, like, accounts that I would have on. Like, I loved Alex Rios when he first showed up. He was amazing. I was so stoked on Alex Rios. I really was.
He was my first prospect love. Like, when I was becoming a more hardcore baseball fan, he was the first guy who I was, like, checking the minor league box scores and seeing where he's at and stuff like that. so sorry to take the reins there, Ailish. You have a text.
No, it was great. What was the line he had, though, with the fan?
Who gives a bleep? That's not the ROM.
Yeah. Ailish, the prop question.
Yeah, so Chad from Peterborough texts in, which total is higher, Vladdy's home run and stolen bases or Tiger Woods' first round score at the Masters today?
Wow, that's a good one. That's a really good one, Chad.
If I can go first, I'm going Tiger's score is higher, for sure.
It's 100%. It's not actually a good one.
Even a great Tiger round, we're talking like 64, 65. Yeah. We had Vlad's homer. You guys were iffy on whether he'd clear the 50. Raptors win total, so 50-ish. So that puts the pressure on not only the 50 home runs, but also like 15
but JD said
to
he can get
stolen
like
bases.
12.
I think Vlad's going to swipe 20 bags.
20.
You're okay. Out of your mind. This takes the cake is the ultimate. There's so many of these every spring training of like, dude. You know, hey, Kevin Pillar is going to start taking walks now. Like, this is that. this is that of this season.
No, that's not. This is different.
Vlad is going to start. He could be a 40-40 guy, you know. He stole four bases last year, okay? He has five in his career. Now you're putting him down for 15 stolen bases. You're out of your mind. It's like Tiger by a landslide.
I'm putting him down. For 20 swipes. He's going to get attempts. Wow. Benny, he's empowered this year. He wants to show people that he's a new, like, he's got a new body. This is the version of popping it off on Instagram and going, yo, I've been working out all off season. Like, this is the baseball version of that where he's like, I am thirst trapping with stolen bases for MVP votes. I'm telling you, man, he's going to get swipes. He's going to get attempts. They're going to go up. And he's going to hit 50 bombs. So, yeah, like I think it's at least a decent question. Maybe I overreacted to it being a great question, but it's all right. It's an all right question.
It's a horrible question.
I am a little embarrassed for Daniele saying, like, setting it up this way that we gassed it up to this degree. But, yeah, I like the question. Okay, so that brings us to Tiger. All right? Mm-hmm. Actually, well, what do you want to do? You want to do Tiger or you want to do Vladdy?
You do the show. You run the show.
Okay. Do you have any Tiger theories? Because, like, man, he was in a hospital bed for 3 months, and now he's playing at the Masters, and it's like he's definitely playing. And Faraday was on here yesterday saying that as soon as he showed up to Augusta, he knew he was playing. It's like, why else would he go? And I'm like, yeah, now it kind of seems dumb in hindsight, like, that he was just, like, testing it out, that it was really going to be this way. But do you have any actual theories as to what has happened here or what is going to happen here with Tiger Woods?
One, he's an alien. Like, yeah, he's not normal, so that's part of it. But we had Lauren Rubenstein on yesterday who wrote a Tiger book with him about his 97 Masters win, Canadian Golf Hall of Famer. And I asked him this point blank and he shot it down, but I'm not going down without a fight. That watching Phil Mickelson claim a major title at the age of 50 years old, well, Tiger's sitting in a hospital bed for 3 years or 3 months. 3 years would be tough, but 3 months is long enough. Yeah, three months is long
enough. Kill Bill scenario, like he's like, just move your big toe. Well,
man, 3 months is no joke. He was in a hospital bed for 3 months. That was like just over a year ago that he was in a hospital bed, and now he's going to play in the Masters less than a year later. Now, he's also running out of time to have any shot of catching Jack, right? He's still three away, which is basically an impossibility now. But yeah, I'm sure he believes that he can do it. But maybe seeing Phil Mickelson win a major title at 50 years old gassed him up a little bit. He's also not normal. That's the biggest thing, though. He's not a normal person. He's not a normal athlete.
There's 0% of me that doesn't believe the Phil thing impacted him in a way where he felt rejuvenated. And everyone has put it as like, oh, Tiger Woods now just cares about Charlie and he just wants to be golfing for Charlie. And I'm like, no. I'm sure he's wants to be a good dad to Charlie, but I also don't believe that it's like he's trying to win that father-son tournament every year. Like, that's his big goal. I think his goal is to win another major. He wants to win one more, and he saw Phil do it, and now he wants to get it done. He looks at this now as if Phil could do it at 50, that Tiger has a 4-year window, and that he's saying to himself, I can do this at least one more time, and I can recaptivate the golf world. He'll pick his spots. He's going to be more intelligent with his body in terms of like the amount of events he plays and the way he doles the sucker out. But I think he's looking at this Masters as, I need to get back out there and test myself and see if I can kind of hang a little bit right now. And if I can just get a little glimmer of hope, then I believe that I can do this over the next 4 years.
Yeah, also, his son is 13 years old. Like, I would actually argue it's better for Charlie's golf development if Tiger's golfing, because then he can't be a full-time helicopter dad as his 13-year-old son is trying to learn golf and still find some joy in it.
Yeah, the Charlie thing never held with me because, I mean, 2019 was the one where he got to show his kids who were actual, mm-hmm. you know, of an age that they would remember what it used to be like for him and to see him at the top of the mountain. Also, listen, I'm sure he spent lots of time with Charlie over the last year, but, like, if he really did care a lot about being Mr. Family Man, do you think his rehab would have happened the same way over the last year? Like, he spent the last year trying to get back into golfing shape, not trying to be dad of the year. Like, how many hours a day do you think he spent with his physios on the driving range trying to be a golfer again?
No, probably none.
Hanging
probably
out with Charlie.
Yeah, no, I know. It's so outrageous. This is where Tiger fandom just goes, like, completely off the rails, where people are like, Tiger Woods didn't just have to be, like, a better dad. It's like, he's now the father of the century. Like, he golfs with his son at a tournament once a year. We're like, wow, well then I guess case closed, that Tiger is now father of the century. We can give him that award. So I think that he's gonna be competitive. I really do. I think he's gonna make the cut, and I think we're gonna have a couple of moments this week where we go, wow, Tiger did this. Here's something I have for you, though, which is, like, we keep asking people, and we're going to ask later in the show, Ian Baker Finch, like, what's the secondary story of this tournament? And it's kind of frustrating if I looked at it through the lens of if I'm an NBA player, right? And I think that's sort of my de facto, or an F1, because now Drive to Survive, where I looked at it through the lens of, boy, I wonder who the guy is that is upset that Tiger is taking the spotlight. So this is kind of a two-part question in the way that I'm going to frame this, but it's like, do you actually think the tour has that guy? Or do you think it's more likely that they're all just like, oh, thank God Tiger's here so no one has to talk about any of us and we can just go out and golf?
Not that, but it's so silly to even talk about the secondary storyline because this is what I said yesterday, is that golf was a fringe sport.
Oh, wow, you're going to repurpose your takes? Great. Well, subscribe to Fan Drive Time. Like, yes, yeah, get all the takes there.
Golf was a fringe sport before Tiger arrived and will be a fringe sport again when Tiger goes away. And the hardos like me will watch plenty of tournaments and general sports fans will pay attention to Sunday of majors, but it'll never be like this ever again. And it's stupid to even try and compare it to what it could be like without Tiger Woods. The guy, I guess, who if you wanted to, you know, really pull out a storyline of the guy that would have been a bigger storyline, maybe he's the defending champion, Hideki Matsuyama. Like, it's like, oh, and I'm sure if you asked most general sports fan who is the defending champion, they wouldn't be able to tell you. It's kind of a forgettable Masters. But, yeah, that guy is not getting a ton of love. John Rahm trying to win his first green jacket. And I don't know, Jordan Spieth always is a huge storyline when it comes to the Masters. It doesn't matter that he's, like, one of the worst putters on tour. Because he just seems to be able to contend at Augusta year after year.
Doesn't Matsuyama have a little bit of an injury right now, though? And I feel like he's still kind of recovering and he's not looking his best.
Couldn't tell you, but yes, okay. Maybe.
Hey, guess what? Ennis is just coming on here to tell you what he said on the show yesterday.
I do no research. Whoops.
It's fine. Yeah, no, it's actually the stories from last year, the Bryson DeChambeau thing. Now he's hurt, and some people are saying that his doctor has been telling him not to play golf, and he's still going to do it. And I think, yeah, Matsuyama's dinged up too. To me, this is all about a couple things. One is, I think it's hilarious how little Rory talk there is. Like, we've just written off Rory, and I wonder if that actually works for him a little bit here. Like, I don't know. He's had the backdoor challenges to try to get this career Grand Slam, and this is the first time ever. Like, I was thinking about it. Like, who benefits the most from Tiger coming back? Who benefits from a narrative standpoint? I've had zero Rory talk. And maybe that's because he always stinks here and he's proven that, like, this place haunts him. But zero Rory talk is kind of interesting to me in a pretty open field. But the main one to me is Rahm. Like, if I'm looking at it through the other way of who wants to grab the spotlight and who wants to actually be the quote-unquote man on tour, John Rahm can do that. I think that John Rahm is a dude who's going to show up at this tournament and be like, I am completely unafraid of this. He's absolutely going to be in the mix. Like, I would bet bottom dollar, and in fact I have, that he will finish top five at this tournament. If John Rahm really wants to seize the golf world, this is a real opportunity for him, where we're going like, Tiger, 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 Tiger. And if Rahm can go out and dominate, then we might be going and saying, oh, they're actually in a – we've done this whole thing of, oh, the field is so deep, the field is so deep, the field is so deep. I actually think that there's potential here that Rahm is, like, not the field is so deep, like that he's just the guy and that he can steal the story of the Masters.
I mean, yeah, you win the Masters, I guess you steal the story of the Masters, and especially if Tiger Woods isn't playing on the weekend. But, yeah, it's still a secondary storyline. We've done this a couple of times with a couple of different guys, like Dustin Johnson at times.
I think Rahm is different. There's something about Rahm. Like, there's a magnetism to Rahm that I enjoy. And you know me, I'm a casual golf fan. Like, I only watch the majors, and then if Tiger's at a tournament or the Sunday of a tournament that's exciting with big names on the, like, but on the leaderboard, but there is something about Rahm, man. I really do think that he can do this. And yes, of course, Tiger's going to be the primary story. What I mean there is that if Tiger is playing Saturday, Sunday, people might be able to get to know John Rahm a little bit better if he can win this tournament in the half spot or the half shadow of Tiger, if that makes sense.
You know, he's got a great story that, like, the short swing he developed because he had a club foot, and, you know, like, and he's a fiery dude.
He's big. He's different looking.
He yells at his caddy a lot.
Yep.
He's kind of toned that down recently, and definitely at Augusta, you got to tone it down. And, yeah, he's won now. So, I like John Rahm. He would be my pick. I mean, he's chalk, right? He's the favorite to win it all.
He'd
so.
Be your pick if you had to. Yeah, the favorite.
I guess.
He had Faraday on yesterday, and he gave a lot of love to Corey Connors.
Yeah, well, Corey Connors is one of the best ball strikers, right? Like, that's he's always played well at Augusta, and those are the type of guys that, that usually hang at this tournament. I like Corey Connors. Did you guys talk to Faraday about Rory? Because Rory's his guy, right?
No. I didn't. You know what? But that's the thing. I didn't even think about it. I didn't even think about it until yesterday. I was putting all my bets, right? So I put in a DJ top five. I put some heavy money on that. I put some heavy money on Tiger to make the cut. I put some heavy money. Nah, I shouldn't say heavy. I put a little lesser money on Scheffler top five and Rahm to win. And then I was looking at the Rory bets and the value of it, and I went, I can't believe I didn't even think about Rory. Like, this is the first Masters that I can remember where, like, I didn't even have a Rory thought, right? Like, I had the DeChambeau thought, I had the DJ thought, I had a Koepka thought, everybody. I went through all the top guys, and I had a gambling thought about all of them. And Rory just kind of sat there, and I went, huh, that's interesting. And I just thought about it through the lens of the Tiger taking the spotlight versus who's upset, who's going to be motivated by that, and who's going to crumble with that. By the way, what do you think about our boy Louis in terms of teeing off next to Tiger? Like, how do you think that? Because you and I both like Louis. Like, we've said that you can win and be a choker. Do you think he chokes right out of the gate with being next to Tiger? Like, or do you think he relishes it because he's still an early killer and that this is the full Louis here?
Nah, you can't choke on Thursday, Friday. There's no choking involved.
Oh, I think you can.
Unless you shoot like 85-85. But no, it's not going to happen. And,
I was going to say, what's the other guy that's with them? What's the other guy's name?
Joaquin Niemann.
Yeah, that guy's going to shoot a billion. That guy is he's going to walk up to the tee and his knees are going to clack together. He has no idea what's in store for poor Joaquin. Why did they do that to Joaquin? That's just awful.
Oh. Yeah. No, I'm all on board the Louis Oosthuizen bandwagon. Hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
You're going to get his first Masters Championship, his second major.
All right, Benny. I don't know what you do now. Your kids are in school. You drive them
to school.
Yeah. It's like, you know, but then what do you do? Like, you just laze around? Like, what are you doing?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, he's going to run. He's going to run. He's going to watch the Masters. He's going to watch some 2 o'clock baseball, I'd imagine.
Right.
Brewers and Cubs.
Enjoy your sleep. Go back to bed. Ben Ennis, Fan Drive Time. Thanks for making time, buddy. We'll talk to you later.
All right.
Enjoy the Masters.
Ya.